What is up, guys? Welcome into Talk To Me Live, Facebook, YouTube, here on a Tuesday night with the Chris Aiken from the Classic Metal Show. Chris, what is going on, man?
What is up, man? How are we?
We are well. We are well. And the Aftershocks podcast. Can't leave that one out anymore.
No, as much work as we're doing on Aftershocks, you certainly can't leave that out. We are an interviewing machine right now, which is great.
Yeah. I saw you putting out an episode a day this week. So what's up with that?
Well, we just, you know what? We're trying to do two a week, and we're doing it to, you know, we started stacking them up, and then we realized that we were stacked up through almost to September already. So it was like, well, we got these to put out. So we just wanted to get a couple of them out right away. The Static X one and Night Demon, because they already have records that are actually physically out, and we already have stuff coming up. You know, we have I have two interviews to do tomorrow, so we're moving literally to September already, and wow. We're you know, it's we might have to put a couple more of them out, but Aftershocks has been fun, man. It's, you know, obviously doing Classic Metal Show, we talk to every Rat, Doc and Warrant, Poison, blah 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 that there is, and that's fine, but it's not my only thing. I mean, I love everything. So it's really kind of cool to be able to interview, you know, all different kinds. And we've been doing some cool interviews, you know, maybe it may not seem coolest to everybody, but like we interviewed Billy Anderson the other day, is a famous producer that did Mr. Bungle, High on Fire, I Hate God, Neurosis, the Melvins. You know, the guy has like 300 records he's produced, and most of them are shit you've heard. It's Orange Goblin or, you know, what, pick a band in that realm. He's done it. And that was really kind of cool. You know, tomorrow I'm interviewing Maurizio from Cataclysm, my favorite death metal band ever. Nice. So that's always cool, you know, and it's just cool to have this different outlet to do more than just classic metal, you know, old stuff. I like doing new stuff too. So I'm enjoying it to no end, man. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, man. It's funny, you know, with COVID shutting everything down, you know, a lot of you guys were talking about just getting bombarded with interviews like over and over. And I really didn't get so bombarded that I couldn't keep up. But within like the last week, I've done, today I did Dee Snider and Jeremy Spencer from Five Finger Death Punch.
Okay.
I did Connie Burton, you know, Cliff's older sister last week. I've got Tony Campos in the can. And like, you know, I've got tonight, it's just like, it's all of a sudden just kind of came pounding in on us. Yeah. And, it's crazy how quickly it comes.
What's going to be crazy is next year when we get all these bad records that people have written in their basements, you know, because that's really what you're going to get is a bunch of shitty records about how bad COVID is. But they're all going to put them out in, you know, like the beginning of next year so that they could tour next summer when they think the touring is going to be open again. So, man, we're going to get killed. About March next year, we're going to get 4,000 Holics offers.
Right. Hey, check out the new album. Buy. Check out the new album. Buy. Hey, will you please do this interview? Yeah, we got it.
And every interview will be the same thing. Well, I wrote this when I was locked down and, you know, I had a lot of time to reflect on the position of the world. Shut up.
Yeah, this is a you know, this song is about wearing masks, you know, but it's like it's more of a metaphor about, you know, it's just gonna be all a mess.
I know, it's gonna be awful, and it's funny because I know nobody's thinking that far ahead, and it's just me just thinking of how many bad interviews am I gonna have to do a year from now. At least right now most of the music was already written before COVID, so it's not, you know, it's not really conversations about COVID, but it's certainly gonna get there, you know.
Oh yeah, it's a complete mess, man. Let's see here. So if you're watching live on Facebook on the Talk To Me page or on YouTube, make sure you're commenting. We can see the comments and pull some of those up. We've actually got our special guest coming up, Jason T. Smith, coming up, and looks like his fans are already in the comment section. So we need some Classic Metal Show Talk To Me listeners popping in here too. Let's see here. But I did want to bring up one thing before we bring in Jason T. Smith. You and I both interviewed Tony Campos about the new Static X album.
Yeah.
And I really dug it, man. You kind of had a lukewarm thing right off the bat, but I was, you know, there's a lot of really good stuff on it, and I was kind of into it, man.
Yeah, I don't hate it. I don't love it. You know, it feels like, you know, polished up demos, you know, to me. I mean, it feels like everything that they've done, which is fine. I mean, it doesn't have quite the energy of some of the other. Some of the musically it does, but the vocals are what they are. You know, they certainly didn't have any room to work with them too much. So it's not awful. It's not, you know, it feels like pretty much what they do. So I, again, didn't hate it. Don't love it. I'll listen to it. It's better than some of their stuff. I like it better than like Cannibal, but I don't know. It's okay.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And the one thing that, that I noticed from this whole thing, let's see here, had to stream, was some of the stuff was written during the trip Eyes in Time, you know, no matter how Tony and those guys don't want to say it happened. And, you know, Tripp's obviously coming out saying that, he accusing the bandmates of, was it patently deceptive songwriting credits on Project Regeneration. I think that they're like crediting him financially, but they're not crediting him on the album itself.
No, they probably don't want his name on it, you know? I mean, yeah. Which makes sense. You know, I mean, he does have sex crimes on his, resume. So, you know, he, and it's a weird thing, man. I mean, you know, this, I interviewed Tripp for whatever his band is that he was doing and might still be doing. And it was definitely not comfortable to interview him, you know, but to be fair, he was, you know, he owned it. He owned what he did. He said, you know, he said his thing and is what it is. I think if he did have something to do with it, they could easily just put it up there and not, you know, they don't have to gush all over him either and say, yeah, you know, Tripp Eisen wrote this part and he wrote this, you know, they don't have to do that, but they could certainly, they would do themselves a service if they would just say, okay, yeah, he wrote on some of this, you know, give him his credits, give him his money and not make a big deal about it. But, you know, I haven't heard your interview yet, but when I asked Tony to talk about it at all, he jumped all over me and was like, I'm not speaking about this guy at all. I won't speak his name. I won't speak about it. And you know that he's doing a disservice because it's out there, you know, it's definitely out there. And it looks like, you know, now Tripp is out there with a very long article today and there's no answer to it. So right. It almost looks like they're trying to hide something. And I don't think they are. I think they just don't want to be associated with them. And I get it, but you know, they should say something. They should just say, yeah, the guy did help out. And unfortunately it didn't work out. Cause that's what it seems like. I mean, it seems like this was after Tripp got out of jail that he worked on this stuff.
Right.
So, you know, they could just say, you know, he worked on it and now it's done. And it just didn't work out as friends or as musicians or as whatever.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a way that they could be like, yeah, these songs were written with him, but we obviously don't want anything to do with him. Yeah. But I think by them blatantly saying that it didn't happen and then people putting two and two together time frame wise that, yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure Tripp worked on the songs that Ulrich Wilde just happened to find.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, I have these, just these plain vocal tracks, you know, there's no way he just had plain vocal tracks laying around that didn't have music on them.
It wouldn't be it's not too much of a reach for them to say, you know, we tried to work with this guy that was once considered a friend and a friend to the band and it didn't work out.
Right.
That's not shitting on him. That's giving him the proper credit for the work that he did. And it's not saying, okay, well, we welcomed a pedophile into the, you know, into the mix either. It's just saying, this is what happened. We, you know, we tried to stand by somebody that was part of our camp. It didn't work out. We moved on, but they're not doing that for some reason. I don't know why. It doesn't make much sense.
Yeah, it's a mess, man. Well, let's get on to some more positive stuff. All right. Let's bring in Jason T. Smith from Thrift Hunters, Thrifty Business, all that great stuff. And you might have even seen him on Pawn Stars last season. So what's up, Jason?
What a fun, uplifting show you're having me on here. Sex crimes. I'm like, what did he call me in for? What? and I'm taking notes. You said you have Tony Campos in the can. Geez, what is this show? It's just sex, 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 sex.
I gotta let him out.
What's happening, everybody? What's going on?
What's Cheers. Up? Your fans are blowing up the chat room over here. Your mom, well, one being your mother, but
and my wife, yeah. So,
well, your wife is a wonderful woman. So
yeah, she is. So is my mom, for that matter.
Hello, Stacy. Hope you are well.
Yeah, Josh said let's talk. You know, let's talk rock and Cleveland. So I was going to grab a Mushroom Head shirt, but I grabbed my Slimen shirt instead.
Nice. Nothing wrong with that. That's the best place there, Toomey. That's if you ever make it up here, you have to eat at Slimen's.
Yes. If you get to Cleveland, and now that they have like three or four locations, right? It's a little bit easier nowadays. Mm-hmm. Slimans, it'll blow your mind, that corned beef.
Oh, it's amazing. It's a sandwich that's got to be 6 to 8 inches thick.
Yeah.
And that's not even like an exaggeration trying to say it's a big sandwich. It's literally that big.
You know, if you ever watch Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, when guy is going to eat something big and he's got to do the lean so he doesn't get the stuff on his shirt. Yeah. With this sandwich, you got to lean and squeeze.
Yep. Or just break it in half, as most people do.
Most normal people do. I'm like, I can fit this whole thing in my mouth. Let's do this. When my wife and I first met our first date was like the night after we met, I impressed her by sticking a whole egg roll in my mouth. And I'm like,
shouldn't that be like the other way around?
I'm like, you need some of this in your life. And here we are 40 years later. There we go. Nice.
You were probably good not to wear your mushroom head shirt with Chris's past with mushroom heads. So
they don't love me.
Oh. obviously being the metal guy in Cleveland, you know, they definitely had their run-ins. We got some Calgary, Canada in there. Is that one of your people there?
Yeah. Was Jason? That Mighty? How are you?
All right.
Yeah. So tell me why you don't love mushroom head.
Oh, well, it's a kind of convoluted story, but basically, you'll probably relate to this, Toomey, you'll be lost on some of this, but I'm sure you probably remember the band Crypt Kicker.
Yeah.
And when I wrote for Scene Magazine, I wrote a review of their CD, the Church of Hate CD, and I said that I thought they were the best metal band in Cleveland. And then Mushroom Head, I was out at a show and their guys came up and got all shitty with me, and I'm not exactly one to back down from anybody, so I didn't, and it turned into this little war. And then fast forward a little bit, I had my own magazine called Music's Bottom Line in town, and
the best metal band in Cleveland. There's
Yeah, there you are.
Well, there I am. All right. No, what happened? But no, then what ended up happening was I shared an office with a promoter that was working with them, and I was friends with the record company that was working with them, and they fucked both of them over when they signed with Universal. So since I had my own magazine, I printed the contract that they broke. I printed every page of it, and I did an interview with the record label owner, and then I did an interview with Jason Popson, you know, to rebut. And needless to say, it ended up becoming a legal mess and everything else. And they have long since hated me from that time on. But yeah, it's weird because we're actually, I don't know that we're better per se, but I am friends with Jackie, who's the female singer in the band now. I've known her for a long time, and I had Jeff Hatrix on my radio show, the Classic Metal Show, about a year ago. He was doing he did a call in at an art show that we were out at, Joe Cleon's art show, and he did a call in, and we got along. So I don't know that there's still, you know, that was back in that time, and that was like 15, 18 years ago or whatever. It's hard to hold a grudge for that long, but yeah.
You know, Mushroom Head, when they were starting out, they were killing it. You know, because I work for Record Exchange.
Okay.
And so, man, we moved so much product, and they were smart. They had sweatshirts and calendars. And so to have a band with, you know, 8, 9 guys in it, you got to be making some money to support them. And they did it right. Like, kids would show up in line for a local band putting out stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was always impressed because I'm like, dang, we got these other local bands that come in and beg us to take their product. And they sit there and get dusty and no one ever gets their stuff.
Sure. But,
and then they had all their side projects, Hatrix and 10,000 Cadillacs.
Yeah, 216.
216, yeah. Right. I was like,
yeah, no, I mean, as far as a working band, they always were fantastic. They always knew how to market, you know. And they always put on a great show. I actually reviewed the very first show that they ever played, which was they opened, and to me, you'll like this, they opened for Down in 1995 was the very first show. And I remember even at the first show, they had strung up a net full of doll heads, and during their last song, the net broke loose and all the doll heads fell on top of everybody that was standing in the pit, you know? So they were doing like professional like shows right from the beginning.
And Jason may be the one person that's come through and actually mended fences with Slipknot and Mushroomhead by throwing me a question before I interviewed Skinny, and then it went viral, man. Is that the first time you've made headlines in the metal world, Jason?
Yes, it has been. So, and I got more. There's a little bit more that I said. Next time you guys talk, maybe have me come in, and we won't surprise him. I'll let him know what I know beforehand. Because I was part of business conversations at lunches when we were doing their product. So yeah, I was privy to stuff the average person wasn't. So I have some knowledge. Hey, since you brought up the Odeon, one of my favorite all-time Odeon stories was we were at a dope show, and I think I'd been in the pit for a while, but I was in the back just catching a breather, and that's when they played Fuck the Police, and I said to my wife, I go, I wonder how many of these kids don't know that this isn't an original song by them. and the 14-year-old next to my wife goes, this isn't their original song. I'm like, no, son, you should go check out NWA. And he ran off. Hey, Fred, it was telling his friends, hey, guys, you know, this isn't their song. These people just told me.
That's awful. Nice. I love all the thrifting people in the board right now, and they're listening to Mushroom Head stories. They're probably waiting for you to be like, and this week on eBay, what I sold was, this, that, and the other thing. I was watching one of your videos earlier, Jason, and you'd sold a tab book for Jethro Tull tab book.
Yep.
For like $35. And it blew my mind, because if you want to learn how to play a Jethro Tull song in 2020, you go to YouTube and just type in whatever song you want to learn, and I'm pretty sure there's someone there playing it. So what a crazy sell there.
I sell a lot of tab books. They're not the fastest seller, but you can always find them cheap. So the Jethro Tull was $1, and I sold for $35. I sold an Yngwie Malmsteen that same day I did that video for like $28, and I've sold a Sepultura or a Slayer. I think I sold a Slayer for $100.
Wow.
Yeah. And so they take a long, long time to sell, but the return is always so good. I don't mind waiting a year to turn my dollar into 35 or my $5 into 100, because there's going to be that person that doesn't know to go to YouTube, right, and wants to give me $100 for a used book.
Sure. Do you keep everything in the original quality that you find it? Or would you, like, let's just say you had a Sepultura tab book, would you, and they were playing in town, would you go out there and try and get like Andreas to sign it? Or,
well, I haven't done that. Yeah, I don't really ever enhance. I will put on a fresh CD case when I'm selling CDs.
Right.
But if I do find, when I go out thrifting and I find CDs, I've found quite a few that have the guitar, the concert stubs in them. So then you have this new way to sell it, because not only was it a good CD to pick up anyway to flip, but now I got the concert stub, and then you find autographed concert stubs, and I'm like, someone's mom just donated all their rock from the early 90s and forgot all these cool concert stubs were in there. Yes.
Nice. So you guys both have some ties to reality TV. Jason, Chris, did the American Pickers guys ever actually make it up to Pinball PA?
As of last week, I got a call from the producer that said that they're looking at August. So it looks like in August. And again, you know, we've been down this road before. So until I see Frank and Mike's van in front of my place, I'm not going to believe it. But from what I understand, we're doing it in August. So, which will be a nice little boost for, you know, in this time where we'll take any boost just to get asses through the door. We'll take it.
So Jason, Chris has a Pinball PA in right outside Pittsburgh, and it's just like one of those where you pay $20 to get in, free play pinball and arcade and stuff like that. So I guess they reached out to Chris and was like, hey, do you have a couple of machines you want to sell? We'll come take a look at them type stuff. Oh,
well, what we have is the Pinball PA itself is 420 machines, and it's
holy cow.
It's pretty much all the classics. You know, it's every Defender and Asteroids and, you know, all the pinball machines from the oldest one we have is a 1948, you know, we have the Wilderness from 1948. And then we go all the way up to we bought an Iron Maiden this year or last year, whenever it was. $8,000-$9,000 ago, we bought.
So how close is that to Pittsburgh?
About 20 minutes. We're like 10 minutes from the airport, right, in Pittsburgh.
Next, whenever we're allowed to travel.
Yeah.
There's a great tiki bar in Pittsburgh. So when I head to the tiki bar in Pittsburgh, I'm going to come by and check that out.
Absolutely, dude. And if you wanted to go and look through the other side, we also have a warehouse. It's a three floor. It used to be an old, like a department store, but we bought it and we just use it for, storage. So we have another 850 machines in that place.
Holy cow. Oh yeah, I'm coming for sure. When we can.
Yeah. Well,
have you done TV before, Chris?
Reality? I have not. No.
Okay, so let me tell you what you're in for. It'll be the most boring, horribly awful day of your life. And because when I had my own show, then I've been on Pawn Stars. You have to film everything you do five times.
Right.
And if you happen to say something funny off the cuff, you got to say it five more times funny. And by the fifth time in your own head, you're going, is this funny anymore? Because they don't sound funny no more. But you've got to make it, you know, like it was fresh again. And then if you walk in a door, you got to walk in it five times. And then because the first time the Harley drove by on the outside and it was too loud. The second time the airplane flew by. The third time your stupid partner on the show forgot to walk in the door with you. So you just have to do this shit all day long. You're like, so we had friends film with us almost and like every other episode. And they would only be there for like 3 or 4 hours. Like, oh my God, this is horrible and boring. I go, yeah, yes, it is 16 hours a day. Now look, digging ditches is way harder than making TV, but I'm telling you, it ain't exotic nor fun nor exciting, but the finished product is, and for you, the publicity is, you know, I've seen many friends have stores and businesses featured and then boom, the people line up, they come, they call, they want t-shirts. So it's really good for you, but it's just not exciting.
Yeah. And it's funny because the other foray we've had into TV so far was we rented out about 30 games to Mindhunter, the Netflix show, Mindhunter for season 2. And they rented them from us for a month. And we thought, man, we're going to see these machines. It's good. We thought it was going to be throughout the whole series. You know, we'd be seeing them coming in and out of whatever place that had pinball machines or something. And when it was finally done and broadcast, I think it's 18 seconds. It's on for like 18 seconds and they kept the machines for like 30 days. It's like,
I figured out it was about, Thrift Hunters was when you remove the opening screen and the end credits and the after the commercial stuff, when you get rid of all that, it was about 18 minutes for a half hour.
Sure.
That 18 minutes took 50 hours of filming and moving around the city.
Wow.
Yeah. We shot in Portland at a store where they thought their daughter was going to get discovered. So they had her ring us out.
Okay.
Like this was her big break. She showed up like a cover model. I'm like, what is happening? And we're in this little dumpy thrift store and she didn't really know how to run the register. She was an adult, but she was kind of like stunted like a kid.
Okay.
And so she started to ring us out and she screwed up and she's like, Papa, Papa, can you come help me, Papa? And we all looked at each other like, what's happening right now? And then she kept getting all nervous and sweaty and screwing up. And I finally said, you know, we're going to see your hands for about a second and a half. And so we finally got done. And that segment, you see her hand touch the cash register and take our credit card. And that was it. I was like, oh my God.
Hey, you had a question, Chris. Do you have the Playboy pinball at your place?
I absolutely do. Yeah. Yeah. You'll have to go obscure to find something we don't have. I mean, anything that was popular, we have, literally every popular machine we have.
All right. So there was a bar and I can't remember the name of the bar, even though we spent like every night there back in the 90s near the corner of Cedar and Lee. And that's where me and my friends and my wife, we would hang out and drink pitchers of beer. And they had a Adams Family pinball game that I absolutely loved.
Oh yeah. That's a very popular machine.
Do you have one?
Oh yeah, of course.
All right. I'm on my way.
You'll have to deal with Steelers fans while you're there, but,
Oh yeah. We filmed an episode in Pittsburgh and my uncle, who was also my godfather, he has since passed away, but he was the one that took me to my first concert. It was Charlie Daniels at Blossom Music Center in 1981. I was 10 years old, and he took me to a lot of shows. So he had a really big hate for, he was a big Cleveland sports fan, hated Pittsburgh. So I called it Pitts Puke, which was an homage to my uncle who had passed on, because that's what he called it. Right. Holy shit, the hate I got. I liked your show till you called my town Pitts Puke. Right. And of course, I wasn't able to explain to those people that, you know, really, you know, I was saying hello to my uncle up in heaven, but oh well.
Yeah, they're passionate up there about.
Oh yes, they are.
Steelers. It's I used to, my partner that I do the pinball place with for years, we would trade back and forth between a Browns game here, and then we'd go. You know, I'd bring him here for a Browns game, then he'd bring me there for the same Browns game with the, you know, the Browns Steeler game, and I went up. The first time I went up, I just went for it. All Browns gear, face painted, everything. I was like, yeah, I'm going for it. And the hate was ridiculous. It wasn't, it started out being bad in the parking lot, but then we opened the trunk and we had a keg. So then we invited people over and people were okay while they were drinking our beer. But once we got up into the stands, and I'll tell you what game it was, and you'll probably remember it too, Tumi, because it's a fairly famous game. It was the one where Tommy Maddox came in and threw the three touchdowns at the end of the game to beat the Browns by like three. The whole game, I was giving it to everybody.
Oh, yeah.
The whole game, every first down, I'm trying to high five them. And yeah, yeah. You know, I'm running up and down the aisles, high fiving people, you know. And then the Steelers started making that comeback. And then it was just like, oh no.
Hang your head and try and be as small as possible.
Yeah. And really it was, how am I going to get out of here? You know, we're all the way up in the rafters. I'm like, man, we're going to have to walk all the way through this after I just harassed, you know, 1,000 people in our section. And it really wasn't bad. I mean, we got kind of pushed around a little bit, but that was okay. It was a fun time. You expect that. If you're going to talk shit, you got to expect it to come back at you, I guess.
Right. My uncle took a bunch of friends. They all went in a van to one game. And the reason he really hated Pittsburgh was they parked very legally on the street by the stadium. Sure. But the cops had every car with an Ohio license plate towed. And so that's what really started the screw you, Pittsburgh.
Funny.
You know, the funny time, you know, I'm a big Titans fan, as my listeners know. And we went up to Indianapolis the year that the Colts were like 0-12, and we go up to Indianapolis. We're like, we're gonna finally, you know, smack the Colts. They've been beating us for years. The Peyton Manning's not playing. We get up there, and the whole way in, you know, me and my friend both in Titans gear. Everybody's like, take it easy on us today, and blah blah blah. We get to our seats. The Colts end up winning. It's their first win of the season. We could not have gotten out of that stadium faster. The fans were acting like they won the Super Bowl. I was just like, and they were just like talking junk the entire time. And it was one of the worst away game experiences I've ever had.
If the Browns win a game, we treat it like it's a Super Bowl. Are you kidding me?
Of course. We're thrilled to get a win. It's good.
But Jason, you were on my show last year around this time, because I went out to Vegas and spent a couple of days at your place and stuff like that. And we ended up doing a podcast, and you had filmed your Pawn Stars, but it hadn't been out yet. And now that it's been out, you know, have you gotten any new fans from your appearance on Pawn Stars?
I don't know if I got any new fans, but everyone saw it. And especially I've been on 4 episodes, and I sold a couple of tiki mugs. And I got a lot of grief from the people in the tiki community, because they're like, I would have bought that mug. And I said, well, do you have a TV show? Because that's what I really was wanting. I was wanting more exposure, because when I got my own show, they came to me. I didn't go looking for a TV show. And then with Pawn Stars, they came to me and they're like, hey, we'd like to add a professional thrifter to our roster. You want to be that guy? Okay, because it's good promotion. You know, I sell online, but I also teach people. When we can travel, I travel the country teaching classes in thrift stores, in classroom settings. And so it's always good publicity to say, hey, two different entities came to me and said, you want to be our professional thrifter? Oh, yes, please. What? Get out, Brian. Get out. So it's work. And the good thing about Pawn Stars is it's not my job. It's not my show. So I just go and get my segment done and split. and I live 15 minutes from the shop. So, you know, these people, I had a friend who said, hey, Pawn Stars wants me to come in, and he lives in like Florida. I go, you know, they don't pay for anything, right? And he goes, oh, what? I go, yes, you have to get here. You have to put yourself up. So for me, it was an easy yes, because I drive 15 minutes. I work, I pack my stuff up, I go home.
When we went to the Pawn Star pawn shop, Chris, this is funny. The pawn shop itself is just a rinky-dink little pawn shop, but they've also bought the entire complex next to them. So it's like Chumley's hot dogs and, you know, Rick's, you know, souvenirs and
Chumley's candy and Rick's barbecue place.
Yeah, it's an entire they've made an entire business out of the whole thing, and it's funny, man. You walk in, they herd you through. You're in and out. You know, it's pretty insane.
Yeah, and the weird thing about that too is they are masters at the editing, because they make it look like it's all, you know, they make it look like it's a packed place instead of a cattle call, you know, going through. They always make it look like it's packed, and it always looks like when they call the expert, like, yeah, we're just going to call him up and he's just going to come in. It looks like it's happening in real time, where, you know, as I'm sure Jason will tell me right now, it's not like that at all. It's okay. Well, you're going to come in on Tuesday and you're going to be here all day Tuesday, and we're going to ask you about this sword that, you know, so you can research it for the weekend and find out everything you need to know about this sword.
Yeah. The last one, the crew, you know, peripherally I can see the crew, obviously. Sure. And so the guy off my left, I see him waving this like orange brick in the air constantly. Right. And that was like the fourth show I'd filmed, and I hadn't seen the orange brick before. So when we had the little downtime, I go, what the hell is the orange brick for? He goes, the tourists who were in the store that get to stay in for the filming, they're instructed not to look in the camera.
Okay.
And when he starts shaking that brick, that means they're looking, and they hopefully will see that and turn away. And that last one I filmed, everyone was like this. You can't talk about the TV show you're filming while you're filming it. You know, right. When we shot Thrift Hunters, we got in line at an estate sale, and it was this horseshoe driveway. So we go up, and this estate sale, you had to sign in. We signed in and we just sat on the curb in line waiting, and the crew is shooting us from the street. So like this long shot, and everyone knew that we were there filming, and a guy keeps going, hey, what are you doing? Hey, what are you doing? Hey, what are you doing? So finally, when I see the crew cut that long shot, I go, I'm making a TV show. I can't talk about it while I'm being filmed. It's not Ferris Bueller. I can't look at the camera.
You could have been cutting edge. You know, that was pre-Office and, you know, all that stuff.
I mean, people would walk between me and the camera crew and they just be oblivious that we were filming a show. Like, they would stop in between the camera and me and go, hey, move.
How much is this camera
for sale? Yeah.
This thrift store is huge. Why are you standing in the 3 feet that we're in right now?
It's funny. The you know, that's how I came across Jason, was one of my early guests on Talk to Me, because I was a fan of his show. And it's just funny to now, you know, this many years later, just, you know, constant, you know, if he has questions about the post office, he'll like reach out and be like, hey, is this real? And I'm like, no, that's not real. None of that's real. None of that makes any sense. But yeah, man, it's just crazy how the, you know, this community is everybody's connected somehow.
Yeah. Sort of thing.
Yeah. It is, especially now with the internet and everybody having a webcam. Now everybody's really connected to everybody.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah. Well, that's how I found out about this, the streaming software was Jason's show started looking like extra cool. And I'm like, what are you doing, man? And he's like, oh, I use this. And I'm like, well, I'm getting that.
Speaking of, how do you start a show without an opening like graphic or anything? You're just like, and hey.
Hey.
Here we are. Dude, you have this awesome background. Why don't you have an awesome opening graphic or opening video?
I had, this is my second time doing this, Jason. All right. I need to calm down.
Let me help you, because I figured out how to make the opening videos, and they were only limited to 30 seconds. Now they've changed it to 5 minutes. I recommend not having a 5 minute opening. No. But yeah, I've got the opening. I've got opening for all my different shows, and then little short videos for my segments in my shows. So it really takes it to the next level.
Yeah, that's great. Chris's, you know, Chris's entire show is online now. They do 6 hours every Saturday night, and you know, you can watch all of it. What is that, on Vimeo?
Yeah, it's on Vimeo. We do the on demand. So it's the only thing we charge for. They can listen for free or and get the podcast for free. But if they want to look in, I'll change the green screen to, you know, whatever background I'm using at the moment, whatever I'm talking about or whatever, and then it'll and then it's available for people that subscribe. And you know, yeah, I love doing videos and I'm self-taught, you know, it's not like I had any great skill at it. I literally just had a computer and was like, all right, let me sit down with Adobe and start pushing buttons and seeing what they do.
Yeah. Same here. I mean, we were on Thrift Hunters was on Spike and then they got bought out and changed. And so they were cutting out all the smaller shows. So we were one of them, unfortunately. And I'm like, I wasn't quite done yet. So I'm like, all right, how do you do YouTube? So I sat down and back five years ago, it was a lot rougher. And it was a lot more work, a lot more heavy lifting. Nowadays it's pretty easy, even though you do have to be, you know, taught a little bit, but yeah. So my friend Nadine, who's in the chat, we started my show and, you know, learned trial by fire, and you know, now I'm pretty good, and I'm showing friends how to use StreamYard and how to have opening videos and graphics and all that fun stuff, because it just makes you look better. Too many people turn the camera on, sit in front of a white wall, and then just meander about,
right?
with no plan. They're like, there'll be like a reselling show with like six resellers. They all got beards like me, and they're like, what should we talk about today? I don't know. I have a plan. Like, I don't want to tune into The Office and have them just be like, should we do a show today? No, let's go. Let's get to it.
Well, unfortunately, that's the general operating procedure for most music podcasts as well. They just start recording, and it's like, oh, what do you guys want to talk about? No idea what they're doing at the time.
I'm shooting a 15-minute video that's going to debut tomorrow after this tonight, and I already spent like an hour working on it, getting it ready. Like, it's sure. It's primed, and when we're done, I'm going to switch over to that and put on a different corned beef t-shirt. And
Well, I think with podcasts, I mean, you get a little bit more leeway into most people that tune in or tuning in to kind of hear their friend, quote-unquote friends, talk about certain topics, to where what you're doing, Jason, is a little bit more a show. You know, you're tuning in for the visual. You're not just, you know, you're not just tuning in to chit chat.
Right. Yeah. I mean, definitely listening to a rock star talk about when they were on tour in 88, you don't need a visual. It's just all very much a story, but I'm showing people, okay, you need to find these items to sell. Don't find these items. These are my duds of the week. So yeah, it's all very, very visual. And I always wanted to make sure it was, you know, I position my show like a late night talk show. We come out, we do our segments like a monologue, or like the monologue and then the skits, and then the guest comes in and talks the second half. So I try to make it entertaining and not boring, you know, and keeping people on their toes. And so, you know, that's what I've always strived for. I think I do a pretty good job at it.
The, you know, it's funny is Chris always talks about his disdain for Blossom. Do you have the
same? Oh my God, I love Blossom. What are you talking about? What in the hell are you talking about?
I hate that venue. I hate the sound. Unless you're in a pavilion, the sound is awful. You gotta walk 2 miles from your car just to get in, and which getting in isn't bad. It's getting out when you're hammered. That's a real pain in the ass.
All right. So there is a little asterisk with me saying I love it. The last, I don't know, 10, 12 years of living there.
Stacy's not happy about
Blossom. My uncle, who I just talked about, him and his girlfriend had season tickets in the pavilion, VIPs that came with parking next to the tour buses behind the pavilion.
Yeah, that's
so of course, they were more into like old school classic rock, like the Eagles and country and stuff. So when rock shows like Lenny Kravitz came, we got the tickets. So you just drive in, park next to the tour buses, bump into Lenny on the way to your seats,
sure,
get a beer, and then there's private bathrooms for us. And then the second the show's over, I'm at my car in 3 minutes. So bye, I'm gone. Right. So yes, I do. Back when I was a teenager, the same things you said, I agree with. But man, I love that setting. I get out west and we go to outdoor venues, and they just weren't as nice as Blossom. The woods and the greenery. You know, it's all very stark out here.
Yeah, I mean, it's it's a decent environment. My biggest problem with Blossom is they've never done anything to amplify the pavilion or outside of the pavilion. So if you're out, if you go to something that's full, a bigger show and it's full and you're halfway up the hill, and especially I go to more rock and metal shows, I don't want to hear Slipknot sounding like it's turned down to like 3 on my phone. It's like, no, I want it to be full blast, and they don't have any screens out outside of the pavilion anywhere.
I get that. Yeah. We bumped into Moby. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Hey, Moby, I'm a fan." And I must have caught him off guard because he's a real small guy,
right?
And Stacy, after we were done, Stacy goes, "You just scared the shit out of Moby."
Because he was like 6'2", so.
And then I met Henry Rollins. Sometimes they tell you don't meet your idols. Huge Henry Rollins fan. I went to shake his hand. It was like shaking a dead fish, and that has always bothered me. For as tough and intense as he is, singing with a Rollins band and Black Flag, and I loved his spoken word stuff. Sure. Shaking his hand ruined all of it. All of it. I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, he always talked about how he'll answer any email he gets. So I got his email address, asked him to come on the show. He politely declined, and then when I went to reply, I was blocked.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's funny.
So
I loved everything. Like we've seen him in concert singing and spoken word tons of times, but man, shaking that hand really. So my friend Christine, who lives in Canada, she's like, "I thought you were talking about Blossom, the TV show."
Right.
So for those who don't know, we have a great, gorgeous outdoor venue called Blossom Music Center. And we were at, I think, the second Lollapalooza. Was Nine Inch Nails on the second one or the first one?
I feel like that's the
first one.
Okay, so this was back before they thought they needed a whole real barricade between the lawn and the seats. Right. It was just a rope this big, just to let you know, don't cross this rope, and like 2 guards. And so Nine Inch Nails starts, and we didn't realize they were about to start. My wife and I were walking up the hill to get a beer or go pee or something.
Right.
And all suddenly we heard them start, and we turned around, and everyone on the lawn was in the pavilion. So the pavilion holds like 5,000 and the lawn holds like 18,000. And we turned around and we were the only 2 still on the lawn. It was insane. Blossom was smart enough to give up and not try and push us back out. And when 9 was over, they did move us back out. And then Jane started, and boom, we poured back in again. And then they got real barricades up.
Right. And one thing that they had to do, I remember this, as a result of that Lollapalooza, they put spikes up the support beams, because the support beams aren't straight up and down. The support beams are kind of like a hill type of a thing, because the venue is rounded. So what ended up happening during Nine Inch Nails, people were climbing up the support beams. And these things are high. These things are.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. I forgot about that, but now I remember that. I'm like, heck yeah.
And ever since then, about like 8, 9 feet up on the support beams, now there's like a big array of spikes so that nobody will climb up there unless they take the real chance of being impaled. Blossom was dangerous at one point. I know I was there once. I think it was an Ozfest or something, and Disturbed was playing. And people just started throwing clods of dirt and mud from the ground. They just started tearing up the lawn and throwing it as far as they could. Well, and they couldn't reach the stage, but everybody that was like midway in the pavilion just got destroyed with clods of dirt and mud. And
were you there? Speaking of, my wife said, were you there for the muddy Lollapalooza with Soundgarden and Pearl Jam?
Most certainly was. Yeah, it was a disaster.
Yeah, so to me, it started raining and never stopped. There was never a moment it wasn't raining. And this is back when you could bring in lawn chairs. So we were in lawn chairs, and as the rain kept going and it kept getting muddier, our chairs sank to the point where our butts were touching the ground. And then as the bands finished, they would come out and people started doing a mudslide down the lawn. Right. So we're sitting there, and here comes Soundgarden and Pearl Jam mudsliding past us, just splashing us with mud. Everyone's car was stuck. We had to throw our shoes away. They were stinking so bad from the mud that we just had to throw clothes away when we got home. It was awful. We went to Lollapalooza at Polaris down in Columbus.
with Soundgarden.
So it was the year they opened Beastie Boys, and we got seats in the pavilion. But them assholes who built that pavilion, the last 10 rows weren't under the roof.
Right.
And so you pay extra for a pavilion seat, and here it is, the middle of summer, and we're sitting in the blazing sun. I go, who do I talk to? This is bullshit. And the lawn had just been sodded like 2 weeks earlier. As soon as Beastie started, they picked up the lawn and chucked it at all of us in the seats. And being the tallest person, I would get hit by every piece of lawn.
I went to see Korn in like 98, 99 at the Conseco Fieldhouse in Indianapolis. Now, I need to stay away from Indianapolis, is what I think I figured out. But it's wherever the Pacers play. And I was down standing by the soundboard, and all of a sudden I hear from behind just like a crash. And I turn around, and everyone up in the seats had pushed down the barricade, and it was like flooding people into the general admission area, man. That was probably the only time I've ever truly been worried for my life at a concert to get stampeded over by JNCOs and kickwear.
I think the only real dangerous thing I've ever done at a show or of course I was involved in it, but as 94, it was Metallica and Danzig were at Blossom, and they were still allowing blankets and stuff into Blossom, and I think we're the reason that they stopped it, because people were just lighting blankets on fire, and then people were like moshing around the blankets and whatever, and stupid me, I got all amped up full of beer, and at some point I was like, I could go right through this. And I just dove into one of these fires and, you know, knocked the blanket over and got all burned up my arms and shit. But I was like, metal, you know, that's all.
Was that before or after your accident?
Before.
It was like a precursor to your burn accident.
6 months before. Yeah. So yeah, it was like a warning shot before the real deal.
Yeah. Give Jason the Cliff Notes version of your burn story.
Oh, well, it's a real fun one. I was working in a steel mill, and the furnace blew up, and I took 69% burns, 52% third degree with grafts. They had to restart my heart when I got to the hospital.
Whoa.
And 14 months of rehab, 22 surgeries, blah 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 blah. Wasn't supposed to live, but I was too stubborn to die at work.
I fell down while I was peeing once at Blossom, and I had to get 10 stitches.
It's very similar.
The people we were with, they're like, we didn't know what happened to you. It was raining. I was peeing, and I slipped and fell on a rock.
Did you knock yourself out or no?
No, I fell on my hand. And so I had to go to the medic and get stitches.
I was playing fifth grade football, and we were running around the track, and I tripped and fell, and there was a broken bottle in our track, and it cut my hand open, and I was like, I'm done with football. This fucking sucks.
That was your end of football.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, I'm not doing this anymore. There was that, and then they didn't have enough helmets for everybody, so we had to share.
What?
I was like, I want my own helmet.
Why is Toomey out there without a helmet on? I forgot it.
I'm just going to say, I think I win the tough guy battle here.
Oh, yeah.
No. Me and Jason are definitely.
Come on. 10 stitches from PM? Come on now.
Christine says, no,
I assume okay, Chris? You're talking with us. You're okay.
I'm fine. You know what? You know, shit happens to everybody, whether you crash your car or you fall down pissing at Blossom Music Center or whatever you do. You know, shit happens to everybody, and you can either whine about it for your entire life or you can make something out of it. And I say it all the time. I was a slug piece of shit when it happened to me. I mean, I was working at a steel mill just to work at a steel mill. And after the accident happened, you know, since then I've built two businesses. I have an IT business, which I self-taught myself how to do everything, build apps and build websites and anything with a computer. I have the pinball business. I've written 6 books. I have the Classic Metal Show, you know, that I do on the side. I have the Aftershocks podcast that I do. So am I saying I'm glad I got burned because it made me better? No, because that really did suck for a year and a half to get better. But, you know, I used it to my advantage. It made me realize that if you waste a day, you don't get it back. So I don't waste any, and I'm very productive.
Corey Davis is asking, was that U.S. Steel?
I'm not going to say who it was.
Okay.
Legally, I cannot.
Right. Okay. I was going to say, Chris, I was in the same boat as you. You can't tell anymore, but this tattoo is over a giant scar. There's a big old hole in my arm. I got an infection from a cortisone shot, you know, real manly, but my arm was dying from the inside out. So I had to have emergency surgery to save my arm and my life. Right. And I was stuck in the hospital for 5 days, two surgeries to save my life. And in those 5 days, I realized the job I was at sucked. I didn't like my life the way it was because of that work. And yeah, you're right. You gotta live every day to the fullest. And I'm like, all right, I'm going back to selling online full time, which led me to having the show, which led me to teaching people, sure, and making all these friends all over the world because of that. And I'm like, thank God I had that happen, because who knows how long I would have stayed in a job I hated.
Yeah. And same with me. I mean, I was literally I think you guys could tell I'm a fairly smart guy, and I'm working in a steel mill, you know, making steel bricks. You know,
I was delivering hot tubs in the heat of Vegas. The hell's I doing?
Yeah, exactly. But it wakes you up sometimes, and it forces you to, you know, to make decisions. And I would not change it. I wish I could take some of the memory out, because you know I don't like that shit's buried in my head. But you know, even that, I mean, I'm obviously not afraid to talk about it or anything, because you know I've built my life off of it, so I don't look at it as the great negative that I think a lot of people probably would.
Yeah, I feel the same. Like it was a shit year, because when I got the infection, my arm got stuck like this. My arm was stuck at a 90-degree angle. Ugh. And so it was a year of physical therapy just on the arm to get everything back, which I have full motion, so that's good. But yeah, in that year, it sucked. It was miserable. When it first happened and I couldn't use my arm, I'm right-handed. The first time I had to go to the bathroom after I woke up with a broken arm, I'm like, And I called out for my wife, and all I heard back was, figure it out! I'll remember that, honey.
Yeah.
But I did figure it out. And I figured out everything else. That led me to a life where I got some great friends in the chat right now. And I've taught so many people to better their life. I taught my folks are 78 and they sell on eBay and they do it really well. And so all those things probably wouldn't have happened had I just stayed delivering hot tubs.
Yeah. That's it. You take the bad and the lemons to lemon.
You take the good, you take the bad. Right. Then you have the facts of life. You didn't think you'd ever hear the facts of life on a metal show, did you?
I think it's when they give you age, you make lemonades.
Yeah,
is the saying there. But yeah, you know, actually, I guess I need like a traumatic experience to get my shit together. So I don't have a cool story. I just
have your wife come in and whack you in the head with a frying pan. Then we'll go from there.
There you go. Well, that would be a normal story in most people's lives.
The Profit Boss. What is this show about? Is probably the best question ever.
We have been all over the map.
What is this show about?
It's about peeing at a concert. Yeah. It's about exploding furnaces. It's about
pedophiles.
Pedophiles. Yeah, it's been quite an array. It's about Chumley's Candy Shop.
Candy Shop. Yeah, no, Profit Boss typically talk to me as a metal and hard rock podcast. We're just doing some live, you know, I'm doing a live stream. Thought I'd bring on my thrifting friend Jason and my classic metal show friend Chris Aiken.
Yep.
And it's about an hour. It's about an hour is what it is.
Thank you. I'll be here all night.
The you know, having you guys actually check out my shirt, Jason. Can you see my Helltrack 86 shirt? My rad shirt.
Very nice.
That was the one thing, the very first like commercial you saw for Thrift Hunters. Jason finds this rad jacket in a bin. And I'm like, man, that is the coolest jacket I've ever seen. But
yeah, it was a producer's jacket that they had wore when they were taking Rad. The movie Rad, it was from the 80s. It was a BMX movie. It was the exact same scenario as Karate Kid, just on BMX. And they took it on tour to get it, you know, people to see it. And this was a producer jacket. And I found it in the thrift store for $10. And I sold it for $800. So
There we go. Chris Aiken and the CMS fucking rocks. The Kiss and Metallica on the wall to me. Metal Fingers. There we go. Wow. Getting a few listeners in here.
Wow. Thanks, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry. I'm so happy to effing rock.
Yeah. Metal.
What, Jason, what do you got for sale music wise that it's cool right now? What do you got going on?
Well, can I share a picture?
Yeah.
I knew you were going to ask. I had things ready to go. See, there we go. So if you wouldn't mind popping that picture up.
Oh, well, look at this.
I just picked up 2,500 CDs. Wow. Now, the ones on the right side, so over my left shoulder, those are all promo CD singles from the 90s.
Oh, so wow.
Most of them have remixes and mixes that weren't on the records. And so that score is going to be about anywhere from $15,000 to $20,000 turn right there.
Wow.
Now, can we talk about where this picture is taking place? I don't know if you've talked about your selling area or where you sell from. Can we talk about that, Jason?
Sure.
So Jason has sold so much crap.
Treasure.
In his life that he bought the house like two houses down from him.
Four.
Four houses down from him just to sell out of.
Yeah, so that picture is in what would be the living room normally.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, older lady was at the end, unfortunately. She has moved to hospice, and her adult kids wanted the house sold quick. It's the smallest house in the neighborhood, and I was already looking to take my – because I was still operating right out of our house, and it took over our house. My wife was losing her mind. I was starting to lose my mind. And our neighbor, who's a realtor, said, hey, this house is for sale. And they just want to move it quick. And so we cut the deal because the mortgage ended up being the exact same as what I was going to spend on renting a space that at the end, there would be no equity. It would just be I rented a space. Right. And so why not, have a house? So especially during this COVID time, it's nice. I pick up in the morning and I take all the stuff I worked on at home the night before, throw up my little wagon, and I take my little wagon. I walk four doors down and this is where I work. And I actually can hear my neighbor's kid. She's my one of my assistants. She's taking pictures in the photo studio right now. So the entire house, except for one bedroom, is a working office. And if you can do it, if you can take yourself to that next level, not only are you going to have equity at the end, it's your place. Do what you want.
Now, when you got that, put that picture back up for a second, Josh. When you acquire that all at once, or is that all is that one person? Or
yeah, it was from a secondhand store that gets like closeouts and buyouts and storage locker cleanouts, and I'm pretty sure it was from one of the radio stations here in town. I saw call letters just on one CD, but because 60% were promos, I'm like, this has to have been a radio station. And so when he first said, hey, I have all these CDs for sale for this big dollar amount, my wife and I stopped in, and we cherry picked out 10 good ones. And when I said, let me see how hot these are. And because he was selling me there as a whole lot or one at a time. And so I got this Aerosmith Sunshine. I didn't even know this song, Sunshine. I was like, what song is that? Oh. But the only track on it was a radio remix. It was the only place to get the radio remix.
Okay.
And so I sold it for $30. And so all the things I was selling were averaging about $28 a piece. Wow. And I bought all those CDs for 50 cents a piece.
Jeez, oh man.
And so I had my assistant spot check 23 once we acquired them. And when I looked at so in the first 23 she looked at, there was two that would sell for 100 each, one for 50. So the average sale price was $21 a piece, and I have 1,000 of those.
Now, will you sell all of those individually, or will you bundle some of them into like bundles of 10? Or
most will be individual, and so it's more work. But that's where you're someplace in the food chain. So this guy got him for whatever price, sold them to me for whatever price, but he wasn't going to sit down and sell them one by one. I will.
Okay.
And that one by one will turn into $15,000 to $20,000. So
okay,
and it's easy. When you sell a lot of products, they're different shapes, they're different sizes. These are all the same shape, the same weight, the same size.
Right.
So once you start rolling, it's easy, super duper easy to roll because there's never a change. Like if I sell a little kid's pair of jeans and then a very large man's pair of jeans, you go from 20 waist to 70. Okay. These are way different weights and I got to make sure I'm doing the right shipping. All CDs are 4 ounces when shipped. They're all that. Now, box sets will be a little bit different, but the average CD is 4 ounces.
Yeah. Nice.
You got a question here. Why all except for one bedroom?
When mom and dad want to come spend a month. Love you, mom. But wait, this way,
you have two spare bedrooms in your own house.
Oh, I know. but if what before pre-COVID, the idea was mom and dad were coming out in March. I don't know if dad would have stayed the whole month, but mom was going to stay like a month. And this way they could just stay in their own place. They can go to sleep and get up when they want, not on our schedule and our dog's schedule. So they got the guest room. The kitchen's a regular kitchen. There's a TV and cable here. So that way, you know, it's theirs. And my wife and I did an all-night rave 3 nights in a row last spring. So we had the dog sitter at the house. And this way we just came here and slept during the day. We didn't want to wake up the dog sitter at 6 a.m. when we got home from the rave. And yes, I can't wait till you guys come out too. So it was great to have a place to roll in, go to sleep, you know, wake up. And I've been known to take a nap or two here, you know. what was that thing about eBay? I didn't get a chance to read it.
Jerry says, not to leave Jason out, I have a record store on eBay as well. You know, done reselling for about 15 years. So this show is cool all around. Love it.
And right now my buddy gave me 7,000 records to sell. So I've been selling a shit ton of records too.
Wow.
So these are all the CDs and cassettes and records I have for sale online right now. With thousands more to go. So if you don't know how to sell online and you have your old music, let me know. I'll be happy to help you.
There you go. Cool. Well, as we wrap this one up, I guess we'll just do some plugs. So Chris, you go first with your plugs.
All right. Well, obviously I have the Classic Metal Show. Theclassicmetalshow.com is the website. Don't come if you're offended by anything, because the language is worse, the attitude is worse. So for that show, make sure the kids are well asleep before you turn that one on. And then there's the Aftershocks podcast, aftershockspodcast.com. We do interviews every Monday and Thursday. This week we have so many that we have interviews every single day this week, but it's aftershockspodcast.com, and hit up the anchor page and subscribe so that you don't have to keep looking back. Just subscribe to it and it'll be delivered to your phone every day. So there you go.
Stacy, I'm going to tell you right now, you do not need to go to the classicmetalshow.com.
Yeah. When I say it's harsh, I'm going to tell, I tell everybody very honestly, if you take the very worst thing you ever heard on like Howard Stern or Opie and Anthony or whatever, multiply it by about 50. That's where you're at. And to me, am I wrong?
You are not wrong.
It is very harsh. It's very dirty.
Corey Davies, my 10-year-old loves listening. Chris, my wife, not so much.
It has a very niche audience, to say the least.
Yeah, that you. Just for the people that don't know, I mean, you have to. You'll tend to like one probably more than the other. You know, Chris and Neely both. Obviously, I'm a Chris fan. You know, Neely can get under your skin, but I think that's what makes people keep coming back.
And yet there's just as many people to say that I suck and that Neely's the man. So no, good. As long as they're listening, I don't care. Hate me all you want. It's fine.
Nice. Now, Jason, go ahead.
So I do a couple shows on YouTube, and my channel is just my name, Jason T. Smith. I do a show on Thursday nights, which is in 2 nights, at 8 p.m. East Coast, called Thrifty Business. And then I do a show with my mother. We host a show on Sundays together. And my mother is always my benchmark. If a 78-year-old can co-host a YouTube show and kill it selling on eBay, anybody can do it. So that's called Selling Past Your Expiration Date, Being Thrifty Over 50. And I have a Facebook group that's free for all thrifters of all shapes, sizes, and degrees, called the Thrifting Board. So come on over, and we'd love to help you get started. If you've got a music collection and you're not using it anymore, it's worth some money. Let me help you turn it into cash.
Cool.
And I do want to bring up one thing you sold. Actually, I was thinking about this, and a lot of my listeners will probably enjoy this, but you just sold like a $600 pair of JNCOs. What's up with that?
No, I sold a $100 pair of JNCOs.
Oh, okay.
But I showed there is $600 pairs out there. So I always like to show what I sold, but to let people know, if you're looking for this brand or this band or whatever, here's the high end. $100 is great. Don't get me wrong. But if you can find this brand, You can go $600 too. So
I was cooking while watching. So
yeah, I hope I find a $600 brand very a version very soon.
Yeah. If I didn't have the tacos ready by the time the wife got home, I would have got a smack upside the head. Oh, Corey Davies, thank you so much. Timmy, we love listening to you too. And yeah, so that'll do it for the Talk To Me Live here, YouTube, Facebook. Make sure you're rating, reviewing, subscribed over on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your shows. And just a huge thank you to Chris Aiken and Jason T. Smith. Thanks, guys.
Sure, man.
All right, welcome. Thanks for having us.